I would like to ask the Commissioner Mario Cordero to join us and deliver his remarks. We are really privileged to have him with us. He has been the Commissioner since 2011, under his leadership, the Federal Maritime Commission has been completely restructured, new programs, new mentality. So I would like to, far-reaching developments, and I think given where we are today, we couldn't have a better and more timely presence than the Federal Maritime Commissioner, Mario Cordero. So thank you for being with us. And by the way, I'm trying to convince him to come with us to China in May.
Thank you, Nicolas, for the great introduction. I'm very honored to be here. Here, not only with Capital Link in its 11th annual International Shipping Forum, but it's in this great city of New York. I'm from California, the Los Angeles area, Long Beach specifically, but in the last couple of years I reside in D.C. So the weather conditions in California are a whole lot better than in New York, of course. But I'd like to say also with regard to the conditions with regard to international trade. I wish I could say it's a whole lot better like the weather in California. But I think I can say that we'll get there. It'll get better. And I think one of the things that I heard earlier, I think in terms of the investing community, absolutely the shipping community needs you, the international shipping community. And I think there is light at the end of the tunnel. Clearly, the international shipping community has had some rather serious challenges in this last decade. Number one, going back to the 2008 economic global recession, had a severe impact on international maritime transportation carriers who continued the struggle with unsustainable transportation rates. And then second, we now have what many today term as the geopolitical recession, evoking a global dialogue on protectionism and isolationism. But before I speak more about those issues, let me tell you a little bit about the Federal Maritime Commission, because I think the most common question I'm asked is, who is the FMC and what do you do? I currently serve as a commissioner and was past chairman. The FMC is an independent regulatory agency responsible for regulating the U.S. international ocean transportation system for the benefit of U.S. exporters, importers, and the consumer. We do this by fostering fair, efficient, reliable movement of competitive international ocean transportation systems and protecting the public from unfair and deceptive practices. But I think what you've seen of the FMC in the last several years, we're not so much a regulatory-focused agency. I think we're more about facilitating the movement of cargo and facilitating international trade. And the FMC does this in so many ways, but let me tell you some of those ways. We monitor activities of ocean common carriers, marine terminal operators, and ports that operate in the U.S. foreign commerce to ensure just and reasonable practices. Two, we review competitive activities such as rate discussion agreements, carrier alliances, and other agreements among marine terminal operators and carriers. Three, we maintain trade monitoring, enforcement, and dispute resolution programs to assist regulated entities in achieving compliance and to detect and remedy unreasonable practices and violations of the Shipping Act. In essence, we are the federal agency that is responsible for monitoring containerized shipping for the benefit of American commerce. Now, the FMC traces its roots back to the 1916 Shipping Act signed by President Woodrow Wilson. The legislation established the United States Shipping Board, which is the founding agency from which the Federal Maritime Commission is derived from. The impetus of that legislation was a concern among policymakers about the state of the American maritime industry. With its passing back in 1916, Congress sought to achieve two goals. Number one, to reinvigorate the U.S. Merchant Marine, creating a Merchant Marine fleet capable of meeting the nation's defense and trade requirements. And second, to regulate the foreign and domestic shipping to ensure competitiveness and protect the interests of shippers and consumers. Both of these objectives were achieved through the work of the then Shipping Board. In 1917, the United States' entrance into World War I, the U.S. Shipping Board undertook an ambitious vessel construction program to establish ocean-going tonnage sufficient to support the transportation and supply of the American troops overseas. Now, I give you this historical perspective because I believe the time has come in the United States to once again invest intelligently and generously into its maritime transportation system. I suggest the questions of competitiveness and protecting the American shipper are key concerns today as they were back in 1916. Today, international trade is an integral and critical part of the U.S. economy. More than the nation's GDP is tied to global commerce, and this figure is only projected to become, or predicted, I apologize, to become more significant in the coming years. Ocean transportation of goods and commodities is the backbone of our trading system, and the FMC ensures that exporters and importers enjoy access to international maritime carriage services. Indeed, vessels carry 53% and 35% of U.S. imports and exports, respectively, and 90% of world trade moves by way of vessel. As a nation, we need to continue to invest in maritime infrastructure at our ports in order for our ports to become more efficient, cleaner, and sustainable with the capability of receiving today's mega vessels. And then we could then apply the cost savings to areas such as technology. About a year ago, March 15, 2016, to be specific, I testified before the Congressional Subcommittee on the paramount concern of having a well-funded and well-resourced Federal Maritime Commission. I explained that the FMC's statutory mandate to regulate international ocean transportation system for the benefit, as I've stated, for domestic exporters and importers was ever more important in this decade, second decade of the 21st century. I noted that the international trade accounts for approximately one-third of our GDP, and many economists forecast that by 2029, international trade will approximate two-thirds of our GDP. In sum, in my testimony, I emphasize that international trade is a significant component of the American economy. However, today, a year later, many in the international trade community have grave concerns with not only the domestic debate questioning the benefits of international trade, but also the global debate. Let me make clear, international trade is a two-way street. Exports are as important as imports. True, there may be an imbalance of the export-import formula or equation, and I, of course, support any way and opportunities to maximize U.S. exports. However, at the end of the day, the success of U.S. exports and manufacturing is dependent on a global consumer, not just a domestic consumer, a global consumer. For example, or as an example, agriculture and grain commodities are a large component of future U.S. export growth. In January of this year, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, as an example, noted that significant growth in beef and pork exports for January 2017, highlighting a year of year-to-year increase of 18% in beef and 26% in pork. And by the way, Mexico is the leading destination for U.S. pork. I thought I'd throw that in since I'm of Mexican-American heritage, for those of you who are wondering. So, on the oil and gas side, we see exponential growth in LNG exports. Within the next 3 years, the U.S. may be the third largest exporter of LNG, coupled with the projected increases in exporting American crude oil. Our nation is moving forward for positive growth in domestic energy. Overall, 2016 ended with a growth in containerized exports though modest, an increase of 1%. However, growth in containerized exports was the first in 3 years. And the value of those exports transported by vessel in 2016 was in excess of $475 billion. Before I conclude my commentary on international trade, I want to provide you a few statistics on U.S. and global performance in trade in 2016 and 2017, or forecasted. I should note that in January, the International Monetary Fund estimated that 2016 global growth was at 3.1% and forecasted 2017 to grow at 3.4%. Last month, Alphaliner forecasted global growth for 2017 at 1.7%, and I note that IHS Market Consultants calculated the container export growth to be at 2.5% in 2016 and predicts those exports to expand in 2017. Regarding imports, IHS also determined that imports were up 4.3% in 2016, making the seventh year of growth of U.S. imports. Looking forward, IHS expects a 6% expansion of imports in 2017, also compared to the U.S. National Retail Federation's prediction of 4.7% of the first half of 2017, which will total, if those predictions are correct, will be 21.8 million containers, or TEU containers as we refer to them. If these last predictions are correct, they would be the higher rates of growth than in recent years, particularly over the last 4 years. Growth in container ports has emerged from a range between 1.4 and 2.9%. Finally, according to IHS Market, the U.S. real GDP growth will rise somewhere in a rate of 2.3% in 2017. Now, I highlighted these statistics, again, to make the point that international trade is a vital component to our nation's economy, and the success of American enterprise is dependent on a global consumer. Let me touch on the whole question of carrier alliances, which I believe the FMC has had a lot of write-ups on this. It's perhaps one of the most significant developments in the international shipping community is that of carrier consolidation. In the year 2011, which is the year I joined the Federal Maritime Commission, we had approximately 21 major global water transportation carriers of containers. Today, essentially, we will have 2013, which will account for 70% of containerized global capacity, each belonging to one of three alliances that's set to commence in April of this year. And those two alliances are as follows: the 2M Alliance, the Ocean Alliance, and the Alliance. And frankly, I'm not sure whether we will see the end, or we've seen the end, of carrier consolidation. In fact, consultants, Sea Intelligence Consulting, they've indicated that perhaps by 2025, we're going to be down to 6 to 8 major international container carriers. Now, the alliance agreement between these carriers is filed with the FMC, and essentially, there are vessel-sharing agreements motivated by economies of scale. The carriers focus on achieving cost savings given the challenge in securing a sustainable transportation rate. The vessel-sharing alliance concept is nothing new. However, the current level of debate and scrutiny within the industry with regard to these carrier alliances really commenced with the filing of the P3 Alliance. And that filing was back in 2013, an alliance between the three largest carriers in the world: Maersk, Mediterranean Shipping, and CMA CGM. That agreement, or that alliance, was ultimately pulled back because of the veto that was exercised by China's regulatory agency, the Ministry of Transport. And the parties then came together as two, that is Maersk and MSC, and proceeded to file the 2M Alliance. And again, these carrier alliances, for the purpose of achieving economies of scale by the major transportation carriers. So the question for the maritime industry and the community of the supply chain is, what is the impact of these alliances to the supply chain? I believe they will result in cost savings and efficiencies. For carriers, cost savings is a paramount concern, especially given the need to invest in cutting-edge technology. So one thing about the shipping industry, particularly the carriers, they've been behind the eight ball in terms of putting in place the type of 21st century technology that is needed, although I'll comment more on that as I will conclude, but that's changing. So the P3 agreement really brought forth some very legitimate concerns a part of this debate, and those were the fact that we started to see the aligning of operation centers that the alliance members would compose, conducting business at arm's length, which potentially would have information sharing. Another concern that is violative of the antitrust laws. And also, this whole issue of joint contracting authority has appeared in many agreements filed within the last 2 years. This authority usually allows all members of an alliance to negotiate as one entity with a service provider or a third-party vendor. And the concern I have with this authority is the potential power imbalance during negotiations with domestic harbor providers. Would a single service provider be forced to accept the alliance terms, or would it be forced out? This is, again, it's a question with regard to competition, but at the end of the day, I think these cost-effective measures are necessary within the carrier industry. 2016 brought some generational changes, as I referenced, with regard to this whole issue of consolidation. The French company CMA-CGM purchased Singapore-based NOL APL. China Ocean Shipping, COSCO, and China Shipping consolidated into one line. Hapag-Lloyd acquires United Arab Shipping Company. Hanjin, one of the top carriers in the world, files bankruptcy. The three Japanese carriers, something that many people believe would never happen, decided to consolidate their carrier industry. MOL, K-Line, and NYK announced this joint venture. And the government of Taiwan moved to shore up carriers with loan assistance. And last, 2016 ended with Maersk purchasing German-based Hamburg Süd. The international shipping industry will continue to evolve, whether as to structure, service delivery, or cost-saving efficiencies. In 2017, I believe we will have an escalation of a number of digital and e-commerce applications with the objective of providing more visibility in the movement of containerized freight and implementing cost-effective solutions in the supply chain. Allow me to elaborate on industry progress on the incorporation of technology. You know, one of the issues about this global debate of international trade and the impact, particularly what we're talking about in this country, is the impact on jobs. And I think the reality is that the real impact has been more about technology and not so much about international trade. But nevertheless, the February 17 issue of Global Trade reports that both Amazon and Alibaba are starting to establish themselves as movers of cross-border freight. Indeed, Amazon recently announced its intention to becoming an NVOCC. This is not to say that they will own or operate vessels. However, I note that many carriers are implementing close links to cloud-based supply chain specialists like Intra, GDT Nexus, CargoSmart, who are all early adopters of e-commerce. Currently, much of the focus in technology in containerized trade is in tracking logistics, such as real-time information in container movements. These advances further visibility and transparency in shipping. Recently, the Journal of Commerce reported that Maersk and IBM are teaming up to digitize the global container supply chain using the technology of blockchain technology to improve efficiencies and costs. This technology will result in enhancing visibility to partner with e-commerce entity Alibaba to integrate transportation and logistics. Actions such as these can reduce costs and improve reliability of supply chain systems. And recently, we've seen the New York Shipping Exchange launched a pilot online portal to book and monitor booking fulfillment. Likewise, the Panama Canal will be launching a new vessel scheduling and maritime resource system, essentially being an appointment system. This system will be used to streamline and schedule transit operations, including critical service providers such as tugboats, pilots, and line handlers. And in fact, this is something I've been talking about with regard to the need to streamline and put technology in place at our marine terminal operators so that we have people who use those gates more efficiently and timely so that we don't have a backup in cargo and getting out of the terminal operating operations, whether that be in New York or that be in Los Angeles. By implementing these new systems, shippers should be able to experience increased reliability and shorten vessel waiting times. Undoubtedly, these advancements in technology I've discussed here with Amazon, Alibaba, and the New York Shipping Exchange, and for that matter, Panama, will help to reduce costs in optimizing resource allocation in the international shipping industry and the trend of what we're seeing today. These are only a few examples of the migration of advanced technology and e-commerce platforms. I will conclude with this. I generally believe these are interesting times in this industry, to say the least. But I think there's ample room for optimism. Once we understand and agree on the American importer-exporter role in international trade, and the international trade's significance in the role in American commerce, and once we can focus on the ways to promote all three, I strongly believe that promoting the American importer-exporter and international trade and American commerce means investing in our maritime infrastructure, including the FMC. And finally, to again have a sense of optimism here, you know, those of you who may know or who are historians, history teaches us one thing. And there was a book that I read of an author who I met in Washington a year and a half ago who wrote a book entitled The Sea and Civilization. And it's all about international trade and the movement of cargo going back to the beginning of civilization. And essentially, the theme and the conclusion of the book is international trade has nowhere but to go up. And that's where we're at today in this world. I don't see anything changing. True that we have some significant debate on some legitimate concerns. But I think with the cohesiveness of the shipping industry and with the investors in terms of, at the end of the day, what are we going to see in the future? I hope we do see great things. So that's my quasi-optimistic message to you all. Thank you so much for your time. And again, thank you for those of you who are in the investment and finance industry for taking a good look at the international shipping and the optimistic components in terms of what it may bring. So thank you so much again.